In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show. We bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. It is what I love to do on a Sunday night, is be here with you. I have to say, this next conversation will not be easy for me, but it's absolutely necessary, and I'm honored to have to address it, because we all need to learn as much as we can about NAMI. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we are speaking with Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. Again, it means National Alliance on Mental Illness. Today is World Suicide Prevention Day. Interesting to have a day like that, right? In light of this, we wanted to invite NAMI Minnesota Executive Director Sue Abderholden on to discuss this vital health issue, including signs to notice when our loved ones are in mental crisis. Now, I must say, there is a piece of information from the website of the World Health Organization, and it says, suicide is a major public health problem with a far-reaching social, emotional, and economic consequences. I want to start with that with our guest, with Sue Abderholden. Sue, welcome to CCO.
Thanks so much for inviting me, Geralyn.
This is a difficult discussion for me every time I need to address it. And I have to tell you, my heart breaks, I get chills, I cry when I get home, and that's my stuff, right? Has nothing to do with others. It's me. And I keep saying to myself, why do we still have to deal with this issue? Isn't it getting worse than better?
It is, unfortunately, getting worse. You know, we had a kind of a small decrease in suicides during the first year of the pandemic, but then it went right back up. And in 2022, we're looking at 835 Minnesotans dying by suicide. Mm.
And it's estimated that there are currently more than 700,000 suicides per year worldwide. And we know that each suicide profoundly affects many more people. Why is this? Why is it that it's affecting more people because they're hearing about it? They know others that have gone through this, families that have gone through it?
I mean, I think we are more aware of it and aware of the impact that it has on people. Because not only is there the grief associated with it, but it's also a more complicated death in a way, because you weren't able to say goodbye to the person. You question whether you didn't notice some of the signs or symptoms. You keep thinking, is there something I could have done? So it's really difficult for the people who are left behind.
It must be a challenge for what you do, Sue. I can only imagine how much time you may lose sleep. But do you believe that this is going to be eradicated? Do you believe that we will ever reach zero when it comes to suicides in the world?
I think it's going to be hard to reach zero, but I would really like to see the numbers go back down. You know, in 2001, which is when I began my work at NAMI, we were only losing 480 people to suicide a year in Minnesota. So that's more than doubled. And, you know, I think it could be that not as many were counted back then, because it can be difficult to discern sometimes what happened. But I mean, I do have some hope, though. And one of my hopes is it will get better because of 988. It's really hard to remember a 10-digit phone number when you're in crisis.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people don't want to call 911 and don't necessarily need to. They need to talk to someone. And so I'm really hoping that 988 will really help reduce suicides in the future.
The amazing thing to me is that as we hear about suicide and we hear about the numbers, we hear about the problems, and we know that parents are terrified, families are terrified, friends, classmates, you name it, people are terrified when they know a loved one or love someone or have a dear friend that is going through this challenge. Knowing that, do we ever get to a point where we're at zero? Has it ever been there?
No.
Never?
It hasn't. No. I really don't believe so.
Then what?
I mean, people can be in such, you know, people can be in such pain, right, that they feel that the only way to get rid of the pain is through death. And that's why it's so important that people know the signs and symptoms, that people know about 988, that people know what to do.
The triennial theme for the World Suicide Prevention Day, like you mentioned, 2021, and now it's 2023, this theme serves as a powerful call to action and reminder that there is an alternative to suicide, and that through our actions, we can encourage hope and strengthen prevention. Does most of Minnesota, let's just say Minnesota, do we all believe in that clear statement?
I think people do. But again, you know, there are those times in our lives where it just feels like there's just no way out. But I do believe that Minnesotans care about each other and want to make sure that people don't die by suicide. And again, it's complicated, right?
It is.
Sometimes people aren't really clear about their intent. Kind of one of the ways to think about it is to listen to what and look at what are people doing and what are they saying? You know, are they withdrawing, you know, from friends and family? Are they giving away their items? Are they saying they want to die? Are they saying that they're a burden? Are they saying that they're hopeless? Those are all signs that someone may be suicidal.
Do you hear from those that find out about their children? Do they call you first and foremost?
Before a suicide,
yes.
Often.
Yes.
Yes. You know, and we're seeing, of course, you know, much greater awareness about mental illness and about poor mental health. And so I think parents are and teachers are very aware and are really trying to make sure that our children, you know, are being taken care of. And, you know, one of the problems is that even when you identify that perhaps a child is struggling with their mental health, getting them into treatment is really difficult. And you're often waiting months. And we shouldn't be waiting months for an illness that can be so serious that it can lead to death.
Has the medical community just lost sense of the numbers, or they find that there's just not enough people that can make a difference in this? Are we putting a dent in it at all? Because you're working hard. I've talked to you before, Sue. You work hard at this, and people around the world are working hard as well. Then what is it that we should be doing more of?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, there were some good legislative changes this last session. So we're going to be looking at, you know, network adequacy in health plans differently. It's not just, is there someone within 30 miles, 30 minutes, but what are the wait times? We also said that a health plan has to take any willing provider for the next 2 years to try to address the crisis. We do have a workforce shortage, and there were bills that passed and money to help, you know, try to address that. But I feel like we're, you know, kind of behind the eight ball, right? We should have been doing this and doing more years ago, but this is where we're at, and we need to just, you know, build on some of those things that we know works. We have a great program in Minnesota called School Linked Mental Health, where funding actually goes to a community mental health provider who then co-locates in the school.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reducing barriers to access. You know, parents don't have to take off of work. They don't have to worry about if they have, you know, high deductible or don't have insurance. Those kids will get treatment. But usually by December, they all have waiting lists.
So where do you go to fill up at the end of the day after all the phone calls, after all of the notices that you are receiving, going in deep before the day is over? Where do you go to fill up again?
Well, I usually start in the morning. So walking is, frankly, my self-care. You know, walking around along River Road, or, you know, even on my treadmill and trying to watch a show that's funny, just to get my mind away from things. And also because, you know, when you move, you release endorphins in your brain. I like to read, and fiction, right, to kind of go to a different place, and then just connecting with friends. But, you know, some days it is hard, and mental illness has impacted my own family, and so, you know, that can make it tougher on some days.
Absolutely. The challenge that is before us, all of us in the world, is so huge, yet you don't hear enough about it. At least I don't. In certain communities of color, do we hear enough mm-hmm. about it? Do we hear it with young people that may be, you know, in third grade or fourth grade? And these are children that are thinking like that. I've heard from my granddaughter, my oldest granddaughter, who's 10, and, you know, she'll say, "Oh, Grandma, sometimes these children really want to leave this world." I don't know what to say to her, but I always say something, and she will come and hug me and say, "I understand, Grandma. I understand." I don't understand. That's the problem. So where do we go to get more information so that parents, aunts, uncles, you name it, can understand this and try to help in some way?
Well, I think especially today, and of course it's Suicide Prevention Month, is for each of us to try to educate ourselves, right? So to learn more about the symptoms of mental illness, to learn more about the warning signs of suicide, to learn more what we can do. And when we see someone struggling, don't wait for them to reach out to you. When you're really depressed, you have no energy to do that, right? And so it's really upon us to reach out to the people that we know are struggling, and to ask them, you know, how are you doing? Are you thinking about killing yourself? What can I do to help? We have to do that. We have to take those first steps. And, you know, sometimes it's kind of an ugly world, right? And so we have to, you know, support our kids to be resilient in the face of what's happening.
It's really something. It is plaguing the world. It's not just plaguing mm-hmm. Minnesota. It's plaguing the world. And if we all don't find a way to get involved in a positive way, saving lives, which I just pray that I can find all the information. If you can give me the website or where we could go. The last time I talked with you, I asked for that website and I never looked at it. But this time I will. I give you my word. And what is that website?
So it's just NAMI, NAMI, mm-hmm. MN for Minnesota, .org. And we offer a lot of free classes, including suicide prevention classes, peer support groups that helps to talk to someone else who's, you know, gone on a similar journey. We have resources in Spanish. We have support groups for people from the BIPOC community and LGBTQ. So that's, you know, making sure that it's a very safe space. So I really encourage people to reach out for that information. We need to educate ourselves. And, you know, I think the one last thing is that, you know, let's just provide a little kindness to the world, right? Don't get upset in the grocery store if someone cuts in line. You know, I mean, just spread a little bit of kindness. I think we could all use it.
It's not easy, but we can all use it. That is for sure. We are all in it, whether we want to be or not. This is real. 700,000 people around the world taking their own lives. We're all in it. So either we're going to do something, and I don't know what it is that I can do, but I'm sure going to look at the website and contact you and find out how do we get involved? What can we do? Because it's affecting all of us in some way. So thank you for joining us tonight. Really, it is quite remarkable what you do, Sue. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I appreciate it.
And for those of you that are listening, again, the website is NAMI, that's N-A-M-I, Minnesota, or MN.org. NAMIMN.org. Look into the website. I'm sure going to do that. And I don't know what it is that we all can do, but there has to be something. And no matter how small or how big it is, there has to be something we can do. So don't say, No, I don't know if there's something I can do. At least look into it if you can. If you can. And I know so many families have so much more going on. But knowing that a family member is taking their own life, come on. We got to do something together. All right. We're going to take a break. And I know that we have a guest coming up at 8:35. Ann Mavity, is that how you pronounce it? Oh, Mavity. Ann Mavity, Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership. A lot of information in what was sent to me, and I really appreciate that. So as we go through all that we have talked about already tonight, I hope that you are inspired to really look into so much that we didn't get a chance to talk a whole lot about. But just know, we're listening. We're listening, and thank you for listening. We'll be back.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money? Still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
It is now 8:27. Welcome back. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you so much for sticking and staying with Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. And as you hear that music, that is Tina Turner's voice. And I love that song. I absolutely love it. We are talking about serious things that need to be talked about tonight. And I'm really grateful that we are addressing some of these things. You know, I look into Jonathan's eyes and he looks at me, even though it can be a very difficult conversation. The bottom line is whether we're talking about SNAP, whether we're making sure that the children are getting the food. It's so great now that these schools are making sure that there's plenty of money for every child to have their meals, breakfast, lunch. You know, some people even take some food home with them if there's some left. So that's the beautiful thing about it, is that we're starting to see people really come together when it comes to children. And just knowing that when we talk about who NAMI is and what they do, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, that's something that everyone should at least stop for a moment and think about it. Jonathan, have you ever stopped and thought about it?
Rarely, but you do. I do. You're right. It's difficult to talk about.
It's very
difficult for me to talk about. But I know people that you would say that they have it together. They
right.
have everything at their fingertips.
You see no challenges in them.
Right.
Right.
But they may have depression mm-hmm. or bipolar disorder or ADD or ADHD or something that I've never been diagnosed for a mental illness. I wouldn't be surprised if I had a mental illness. I wouldn't be surprised. But the what society deems as quote unquote normal and having a deviation in your brain from what society believes is normal, that can be hard to diagnose. That can be hard to discuss. That can be hard to, and that's not even mentioning living with it. So we need to have these discussions. I need to be more open to having those discussions as well, just for my own sake. And it's something that we still have difficulties with in this country, especially here in this country. We really do have difficulties talking about mental illness.
I'm proud of you, Jonathan, though. It's not easy for people to say, maybe that's something I need to work, to look into. Maybe that's something I need to understand more. It's not easy.
No,
you know,
it's not.
Some people are really, really, really uncomfortable, especially parents. You know, so there you go. All right. As we are moving forward to our next guest, I do want to say that there's a whole lot for us to talk about that's going on in the world right now. And a lot of us don't want to address it. There was a time in my life when I would close off the world. You know, I would sit back and go, okay, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear that story, you know, of someone being killed or raped or, oh my gosh. And there was a woman that worked here at WCCO many, many years ago. And she told me, a story that I never thought I would hear before. And you just never know who's going through something. And with, if you're going through something, try to go through it with joy. Try to find a smile in some way. I know that's what I do. Unfortunately, we have to take a break. And then, of course, coming up next will be our guest, Ann Mavity, Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. And there is a lot to talk about how much is costing a home. You don't even see a lot of for sale signs in the Twin Cities necessarily these days. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a break and we'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. It is now 8:37 here at WCCO, and we are excited to introduce our next guest. Ann Mavity is her name, Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. Why are we talking about it? Well, here we go. While prices have dropped in 2023, the average amount of money to buy a home is still nearly $100,000 more now than it was at the start of the COVID pandemic. With reports of people shying away from becoming homeowners, questions about affordable housing continue to bubble up every now and again. Are there any good strategies that cities and states can provide so people can reach that goal of home ownership? Ann Mavity, Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership, is joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline for a conversation about this issue and some of their initiatives. Welcome, Annie. Ann, I keep wanting to say Annie. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having us and for talking about this really important issue tonight.
It is really important. I remember the exciting time in the great state of Minnesota, especially the Twin Cities, when young people were buying homes. My first house that I bought was $30,000. It was a big old house with a lot of problems, but $30,000. And the interest rates at that time was about 16. I mean, you think now what you'd have to go through just to get $100,000 of a house. So tell us where you stand when it comes to what housing, what's happening with housing, not just in the great Twin Cities, but the state of Minnesota, period.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the what we're seeing right now, I think everyone somewhere in their family, individually or people they know, the housing squeeze is being felt in every single corner of the state. And we know certainly you're seeing that in home ownership, where the cost of a average home in the Twin Cities is well over $400,000. And throughout the state, it's increasingly out of reach for the folks who want it and need it. And of course, in the multifamily rental market, it's even a tighter squeeze. We know that one out of every four renter households pay more than they can afford for housing. And that's true in every county in Minnesota. 25% of folks are paying more than they can afford.
Oh, my God. How do they keep that going?
Well, in some ways, we're not, right? I think the hardest thing about this is that so many times individuals feel like it's a personal failure that they can't afford their own first home. They hear their parents, you know, had a home, sort of your story that we just heard as well. Or they're just struggling to pay the rent every month. And it feels like a personal failure. And I think what we really need to understand is that it's not. It's a housing system that's really upside down and broken. And it costs more to build a home than most folks can afford to pay. And that's what the challenge is right now. And it's why folks are feeling it from first-time homeowners all the way to our hardest-working, lowest-wage households as well.
This discussion has been going on now for decades, mm-hmm. and we don't seem to see a big enough difference in the prices and the availability and whether or not the young, you know, the 30-something-year-olds can actually buy their first house or the tiny house. Jonathan Lohr, my mm-hmm. producer, and I were talking about tiny homes. And even right. that, the prices are just going up and up and up. How are we supposed to sustain it, not just here in the Twin Cities, not just here in the state of Minnesota, but across the country?
I think we have good solutions that we need to have both the political will and the public will to actually put into practice. So we know, for example, that when, you know, it costs a lot to build a home for a lot of different reasons. Certainly land costs are one of them. And, you know, one of the things that we're looking at right now, and frankly, that states around across the United States have looked at, to say, how do we reduce the costs it takes to build a home? And some of those are land costs. So if you have one home on a couple acres and are required by your local city folks to have, you know, three bedrooms and three car garages and all of that, every single piece of that costs more. And if you could put three homes on that same piece of land, you can cut those costs down dramatically for each individual homeowner. So there's lots of strategies related to land use as well to really reduce some of these costs to folks. But we need to have a more systematic approach to it. So we're looking, for example, you know, in Montana, the governor had a task force that's looked at, you know, how do you make sure people can keep these costs down as they're trying to do it. Washington State's done it. 23 states around the country have done this. We think Minnesota can do that as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the, you remember those tiny homes that they used to have on television? Sure. There were different shows that showed how mm-hmm. you could build a tiny home. Okay, so there are families, even grandparents, who say, hey, I got enough land here. It'd be nice for me to be able to put two, you know, tiny homes yeah. on this property so that, you know, my grandchildren will have a place to live, will have a place that they own themselves. These are the things that were talked about, you know, just a couple of years ago. And now I hardly ever see those shows anymore. I hardly ever hear about tiny homes. And I've heard from homeowners who will tell me, hey, they don't want us to put any tiny homes on the properties. It's illegal in certain states. Is that true?
Sure. Yes. And actually, a lot of those rules right now are governed by cities. So from city to city, you might have different rules. Sometimes these are called accessible dwelling units, accessory dwelling units, and or ADUs, sort of like tiny homes, or maybe you convert your garage or the top of your garage or, you know, things like that to add additional homes. So, you know, this is one of the things that we're seeing across the country and we're hoping to do in Minnesota as well, is to say people should be able to do that on their property without having to ask all this permission. If there's room and there's space to do it, add that home. Now, will that solve our entire housing challenges
no.
or certainly the cost challenges? No. But it will help release that innovation and creativity to let people actually begin to solve this by themselves and together more broadly. So, yes, we need to make sure that there's not barriers when people want to do these kinds of solutions. And we're working on that at the state level. We need everyone to be working on that at the state level as well, to help say, yes, we need to be smarter and allow, you know, much more creative uses of our land in order to have better solutions.
You know, a lot of the homes that we pass by every day and don't know who lived there, there are five generations living in some of those homes, right? Because but each one of those generations can't afford it except those that own the house. So where do we go from here? Are we talking to our legislators and saying to them, we need to find a way to make sure that the next generation is able to buy something or able to build something either on their property or buy a piece of property and put it on that? I'm not quite sure how it works, but if you can help me understand it, I would really appreciate it.
Well, and I would say it's a both and, because certainly for many folks, making sure they have affordable rental housing is super important. You know, with the baby boomer generation, what we see is a lot of folks that are staying in their homes really longer than they can do so safely or to keep the property up. But on a fixed income, trying to access a rental that where they might be able to get better care as they age, that's really hard too. So what we really need is a more robust look across all these housing choices, right? I just help my parents who are in their 80s sell their house of 30 years and move them into an apartment, right? There's lots of reasons people are making choices for these different housing types. So part of what we need to do, so this last year was actually very effective in getting a lot of resources focused and dedicated on housing. Sort of the upside of a bad situation in housing right now is that it's affecting more people, and more people are paying attention and want to see solutions up and down the income continuum, right? And so that the state actually deployed quite a bit of funding towards housing. Much of it was one-time funding, because housing is a good way to use one-time funding. You build it, and it's there for the next, you know, 50 years, 100 years. So that's a great solution. Now we need to make sure that all those barriers that get in place to actually create the housing, right? It takes years sometimes to put together these projects and developments, because oftentimes to make it affordable, you're not just going to one bank and getting a loan in the way we used to, right? What you have to do is get lots of different sources, maybe down payment assistance. You might need someone to help pay off the interest, or, you know, give a loan specifically to pay the interest so that you're only paying the principal. All these different kinds of strategies need to be put in place. And with land use, we need to make sure that the rules to build are super clear, that we're not adding costs through this whole building process, and that we're really facilitating this supply and development of housing. And so we think that there can be a lot of ways we can work with local government to make sure that they're not standing in the way of building housing by putting too many rules and regulations on top of it.
I believe there's too many rules and regulations. It is so difficult, even for, you know, young adults that are in their 30s, they're having a hard time doing it. Not only that, it used to be you could drive down communities, right? Go into a community and you're going to see some of those houses for sale, and you get a chance to look and you say, oh, I want to call and see if I can, you know, go take a look at it. You don't even see signs out anymore. So the only way that you can really find out is through the realtors. Am I correct with that?
So, I mean, certainly for the home ownership market, particularly looking online, everything, you know, yes, you can get information online and you can work through realtors to access that. I think the hardest thing right now, though, is that there's also places like the Minnesota Home Ownership Center and a whole network of organizations that they work with that provide information for first-time homeowners to get connected to the kinds of resources that they might not otherwise have access to. I do want to say, though, that, you know, we are still recovering from the recession back in 2006, 7, 8. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Where everything tightened up and the creation, the building, production of new housing, both rental and single family home ownership, just plummeted. And so that lasted for years. And so now we are still 20 years later trying to catch up to what wasn't built. So just to keep up with population growth, job growth, those kinds of things, we sort of need to overproduce more housing right now than you'd think for year over year because we're behind.
Yeah.
There was a recent report came out from the National Low Income Housing Coalition based out of D.C. I'm on the board of that organization. In Minnesota, for the rental side, they've noted that especially for lowest income households, right, they are the ones squeezed the most. Certainly, home ownership is out of reach, but housing broadly is. So out of 167,000 extremely low income households that Minnesota has, there's only 63,000 rental homes that are available to them.
Oh my goodness!
More than 100,000 units.
I wish we had more time together. We have run out of time, and I don't want to run out of time. I must have you back on, Ann. I must have you back on so we can talk about this more. And I appreciate your knowledge and helping me understand tonight. But wow, this is huge. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
That is Ann Mavity, Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so glad to be back with you again, and it has been a pleasure, of course. Now, tonight we have Center Stage coming up, and it's all things arts and entertainment, and we really want everyone to know all about as much as possible. We have some great guests lined up in the 9 o'clock hour, so we don't want you to miss this. We don't want you to miss it. Stay tuned for the 9 o'clock hour, which is called Center Stage. We've got some great guests. Some are friends of mine, some of people that I just know, and it's just beautiful. Also, by the way, it has been a pleasure tonight to really talk with so many great guests, and that's because of Jonathan.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vien and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. It is now 8:37 here at WCCO, and we are excited to introduce our next guest. Ann Mavity is her name, Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. Why are we talking about it? Well, here we go. While prices have dropped in 2023, the average amount of money to buy a home is still nearly $100,000 more now than it was at the start of the COVID pandemic. With reports of people shying away from becoming homeowners, questions about affordable housing continue to bubble up every now and again. Are there any good strategies that cities and states can provide so people can reach that goal of home ownership? Ann Mavity, Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership, is joining us on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline for a conversation about this issue and some of their initiatives. Welcome, Annie. Ann, I keep wanting to say Annie. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you?
I am great. Thank you for having us and for talking about this really important issue tonight.
It is really important. I remember the exciting time in the great state of Minnesota, especially the Twin Cities, when young people were buying homes. My first house that I bought was $30,000. It was a big old house with a lot of problems, but $30,000. And the interest rates at that time was about 16. I mean, you think now what you'd have to go through just to get $100,000 of a house. So tell us where you stand when it comes to what housing, what's happening with housing, not just in the great Twin Cities, but the state of Minnesota, period.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the what we're seeing right now, I think everyone somewhere in their family, individually or people they know, the housing squeeze is being felt in every single corner of the state. And we know certainly you're seeing that in home ownership, where the cost of a average home in the Twin Cities is well over $400,000. And throughout the state, it's increasingly out of reach for the folks who want it and need it. And of course, in the multifamily rental market, it's even a tighter squeeze. We know that one out of every four renter households pay more than they can afford for housing. And that's true in every county in Minnesota. 25% of folks are paying more than they can afford.
Oh, my God. How do they keep that going?
Well, in some ways, we're not, right? I think the hardest thing about this is that so many times individuals feel like it's a personal failure, that they can't afford their own first home. They hear their parents, you know, had a home, sort of your story that we just heard as well, or they're just struggling to pay the rent every month, and it feels like a personal failure. And I think what we really need to understand is that it's not. It's a housing system that's really upside down and broken, and it costs more to build a home than most folks can afford to pay, and that's what the challenge is right now, and it's why folks are feeling it from first-time homeowners all the way to our hardest-working, lowest-wage households as well.
This discussion has been going on now for decades, and we don't seem to see a big enough difference in the prices and the availability and whether or not the young, you know, the 30-something-year-olds can actually buy their first house or the tiny house. Jonathan Lohr, my producer, and I were talking about tiny homes, and even the prices are just going up and up and up. How are we supposed to sustain it, not just here in the Twin Cities, not just here in the state of Minnesota, but across the country?
I think we have good solutions that we need to have both the political will and the public will to actually put into practice. So we know, for example, that it costs a lot to build a home for a lot of different reasons. Certainly land costs are one of them. And, you know, one of the things that we're looking at right now, and frankly, that states around across the United States have looked at, to say, how do we reduce the costs it takes to build a home? And some of those are land costs. So if you have one home on a couple acres and are required by your local city folks to have, you know, three bedrooms and three car garages and all of that, every single piece of that costs more. And if you could put three homes on that same piece of land, you can cut those costs down dramatically for each individual homeowner. So there's lots of strategies related to land use as well to really reduce some of these costs to folks. But we need to have a more systematic approach to it. So we're looking, for example, you know, in Montana, the governor had a task force that's looked at, you know, how do you make sure people can keep these costs down as they're trying to do it. Washington State's done it. 23 states around the country have done this. We think Minnesota can do that as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the, you remember those tiny homes that they used to have on television? Sure. There were different shows that showed how mm-hmm. you could build a tiny home. Okay, so there are families, even grandparents, who say, hey, I got enough land here. It'd be nice for me to be able to put two, you know, tiny homes yeah. on this property so that, you know, my grandchildren will have a place to live, will have a place that they own themselves. These are the things that were talked about, you know, just a couple of years ago. And now I hardly ever see those shows anymore. I hardly ever hear about tiny homes. And I've heard from homeowners who will tell me, hey, they don't want us to put any tiny homes on the properties. It's illegal in certain states. Is that true?
Sure. Yes. And actually, a lot of those rules right now are governed by cities. So from city to city, you might have different rules. Sometimes these are called accessible dwelling units, accessory dwelling units, and or ADUs, sort of like tiny homes, or maybe you convert your garage or the top of your garage or, you know, things like that to add additional homes. So, you know, this is one of the things that we're seeing across the country and we're hoping to do in Minnesota as well, is to say people should be able to do that on their property without having to ask all this permission. If there's room and there's space to do it, add that home. Now, will that solve our entire housing challenges No. or certainly the cost challenges? No. But it will help release that innovation and creativity to let people actually begin to solve this by themselves and together more broadly. So, yes, we need to make sure that there's not barriers when people want to do these kinds of solutions. And we're working on that at the state level. We need everyone to be working on that at the state level as well, to help say, yes, we need to be smarter and allow, you know, much more creative uses of our land in order to have better solutions.
You know, a lot of the homes that we pass by every day and don't know who lived there, there are five generations living in some of those homes, right? Because but each one of those generations can't afford it except those that own the house. So where do we go from here? Are we talking to our legislators and saying to them, we need to find a way to make sure that the next generation is able to buy something or able to build something either on their property or buy a piece of property and put it on that? I'm not quite sure how it works, but if you can help me understand it, I would really appreciate it.
Well, and I would say it's a both and, because certainly for many folks, making sure they have affordable rental housing is super important. You know, with the baby boomer generation, what we see is a lot of folks that are staying in their homes really longer than they can do so safely or to keep the property up. But on a fixed income, trying to access a rental that where they might be able to get better care as they age, that's really hard too. So what we really need is a more robust look across all these housing choices, right? I just helped my parents who are in their 80s sell their house of 30 years and move them into an apartment, right? There's lots of reasons people are making choices for these different housing types. So part of what we need to do, so this last year was actually very effective in getting a lot of resources focused and dedicated on housing. Sort of the upside of a bad situation in housing right now mm-hmm. is that it's affecting more people and more people are paying attention and want to see solutions up and down the income continuum, right? And so that the state actually deployed quite a bit of funding towards housing. Much of it was one-time funding because housing is a good way to use one-time funding. You build it and it's there for the next, you know, 50 years, 100 years. So that's a great solution. Now we need to make sure that all those barriers that get in place to actually create the housing, right? It takes years sometimes to put together these projects and developments, because oftentimes to make it affordable, you're not just going to one bank and right. getting a loan in the way we used to, right? Right? What you have to do is get lots of different sources, maybe down payment assistance. You might need someone to help pay off the interest, or, you know, give a loan specifically to pay the interest so that you're only paying the principal. All these different kinds of strategies need to be put in place. And with land use, we need to make sure that the rules to build are super clear that we're not adding costs through this whole building process, and that we're really facilitating this supply and development of housing. And so we think that there can be a lot of ways we can work with local government to make sure that they're not standing in the way of building housing by putting too many rules and regulations on top of it.
I believe there's too many rules and regulations. It is so difficult, even for, you know, young adults that are in their 30s, they're having a hard time doing it. Not only that, it used to be you could drive down communities, right? Go into a community and you're going to see some of those houses for sale, and you get a chance to look and you say, oh, I want to call and see if I can, you know, go take a look at it. You don't even mm-hmm. see signs out anymore. So the only way that mm-hmm. you can really find out is through the realtors. Am I correct with that?
So, I mean, certainly for the home ownership market, particularly looking online, everything, you know, yes, you can get information online and you can work through realtors to access that. I think the hardest thing right now, though, is that there's also places like the Minnesota Home Ownership Center mm-hmm. and a whole network of organizations that they work with that provide information for first-time homeowners to get connected to the kinds of resources that they might not otherwise have access to. I do want to say, though, that, you know, we are still recovering from the recession back in 2006, 7, 8. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Where everything tightened up and the creation, the building, production of new housing, both rental and single family home ownership, just plummeted. And so that lasted for years. And so now we are still 20 years later trying to catch up to what wasn't built. So just to keep up with population growth, job growth, those kinds of things, we sort of need to overproduce more housing right now than you'd think for year over year because we're behind.
Yeah.
There was a recent report came out from the National Low Income Housing Coalition based out of D.C. I'm on the board of that organization. In Minnesota, for the rental side, they've noted that especially for lowest income households, right, they are the ones squeezed the most. Certainly, home ownership is out of reach, but housing broadly is. So out of 167,000 extremely low income households that Minnesota has, there's only 63,000 rental homes that are available to them.
Oh, my goodness.
That's more than 100,000 units.
Oh, my gosh. I wish we had more time together. We have run out of time, and I don't want to run out of time. I must have you back on, Anne. I must have you back on so we can talk about this more, and I appreciate your knowledge and helping me understand tonight. But, wow, this is huge. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
That is Anne Mavity, Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so glad to be back with you again, and it has been a pleasure, of course. Now, tonight we have Center Stage coming up, and it's all things arts and entertainment, and we really want everyone to know all about as much as possible. We have some great guests lined up in the 9 o'clock hour, so we don't want you to miss this. We don't want you to miss it. Stay tuned for the 9 o'clock hour, which is called Center Stage. We've got some great guests. Some are friends of mine, some are people that I just know, and it's just beautiful. Also, by the way, it has been a pleasure tonight to really talk with so many great guests, and that's because of Jonathan Lowe. Thank you so much, Jonathan. So far, it's just been going really well. And I have to say that sometimes when I come in on a Sunday night, I always say to myself, what is it that you want to put forward, Geraldine? What is it that you want people to feel or to hear from me? And that's important to me, to make sure that we're all in this together and we can all talk about it together as well. All right. I think we only have a few more minutes or a few more seconds. Yeah, seconds. But to let you know that coming up next is Center Stage, and it's one of my favorite hours. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am so glad to be back with you again, and it has been a pleasure, of course. Now, tonight we have Center Stage coming up, and it's all things arts and entertainment, and we really want everyone to know all about as much as possible. We have some great guests lined up in the 9 o'clock hour, so we don't want you to miss this. We don't want you to miss it. Stay tuned for the 9 o'clock hour, which is called Center Stage. We've got some great guests. Some are friends of mine, some are people that I just know, and it's just beautiful. Also, by the way, it has been a pleasure tonight to really talk with so many great guests, and that's because of Jonathan Lowe. Thank you so much, Jonathan. So far, it's just been going really well. And I have to say that sometimes when I come in on a Sunday night, I always say to myself, what is it that you want to put forward, Geraldine? What is it that you want people to feel or to hear from me? And that's important to me, to make sure that we're all in this together and we can all talk about it together as well. All right. I think we only have a few more minutes or a few more seconds. Yeah, seconds. But to let you know that coming up next is Center Stage, and it's one of my favorite hours. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money? Still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vien and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes of, a Crime House Original.
Crimes of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.